there was. And that's not a lot when you hit an animal that's the size of that. Even a lightweight doe typically will be 150 to 160 pounds. And if it's running, that's that much weight in motion. I'm not even going to go into the mathematics of trying to figure out the weight of something in motion and seeing how heavy it is. But I will tell you, I weigh, at the time, was probably about 220 pounds. That motorcycle that I was on was over 600 pounds. So that was almost 800 pounds of motion going straight ahead at 45 miles an hour. And that motorcycle got pushed off the road within about 40 or 50 feet because of the impact that the deer hit. So just an idea to keep in mind there. I don't know if we're going to be able to get the rest of the presentation up and running here in time. I appreciate Nick trying to help out here. But one of the things that I had on there on the graphics was showing all the different types of strikes that pitchers can throw. And just take a look here, make sure we don't have anything working. But I don't know how many people have ever looked at that, but we hear people talk about throwing a curveball or people throwing a sinker, people throwing a knuckleball, those kind of things. Most of the times, if you're watching a Reds game, you're only going to hear them talking about four or five or six different types of pitches. The graphics that I had in for you here shows about 24 different types of pitches that pitchers can throw. And they show the arc that they throw at the batter, how it moves. If I throw it straight at you, does it curve this way? Does it curve that way? Does it go down and come back up? And it's just interesting to see some of the techniques that pitchers can do that. And the reason that I wanted to put that into the lesson is to focus on Satan and focus on life and how life is. Satan wants to integrate our lives with those pitches. We've used this passage, and I've used it in so many of my recent sermons. I think I've seen it in several other people's sermons recently about Satan being a roaring lion and how we always need to be vigilant, watching out for him. I think, hey, thank you, guys. We have a great technical crew here. So let me see where I'm at here. Looks like you got it set up there. So let's go ahead and we'll just reread this again and see if we can pick it up. Luke chapter 12, 13 through 21. Then one of the crowd said to him, "Teacher," I'm going to go back here a little bit. I think I need to get back to where I was at. Okay, there we go. So there was the deer that I told you. It's probably a muley. Chapter 12, verses 13 through 21 of Luke. One of the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." But he said to him, "Man, who made me a judge or an arbitrator over you?" And he said to them, "Take heed and beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist of the abundance of the things he possesses." Now, this lesson is not about the abundance of things we possess. I keep showing motorcycles, shiny motorcycles, motorcycles that I like, but that's not the thing that I want you to pay attention to. And thanks again, guys, for doing that. I want us to pay attention to the things that distract us. We talked about it in the adult class today. One of the things that often causes people not to go through with being very well prepared for being a Christian, to face the world, to face judgment, is this lack of preparation. The more things that we have, it's just like the person on their phone, the more distractions that we have. And so sometimes having TVs, having houses, having cars and motorcycles and boats, and having too much to do, all are things that are being pitched at us by Satan in ways that we are just caught off guard and missing constantly. So think about that. As the passage continues on, "Then he spoke a parable to them, saying, 'The ground of a certain rich man yielded plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, "What shall I do, since I have no room to store my crops?" So he said, "I will do this. I will pull down my barns, I will build greater, and there I will store all my crops and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry." But God said to him, "Fool, this night your soul will be required of you. Then whose will those things be which you have provided?" I know this has been in the lesson of Kyle's recently. I think Cody probably had one recently, and I think Brock even had one recently. But it's such an important passage. And one thing that I pulled out of here that I hadn't really thought about, sometimes we think about the things that we do. I'm accomplishing a lot of things, and so God will be happy with me. As a Christian, I'm accomplishing a lot of things. We look at this story here that's told in Luke, and we look at this rich man, and we think, he was just totally focused on being lazy and not thinking about his soul. Well, we just went through there. He tore down his barns and he built new ones. A lot of work was done for him to get to this point. And sometimes we forget about that. Well, whether it was having a nice vehicle to ride and enjoying that, or maybe how you raise your family, the neighborhood that you move to, the schools that you go to, the professions you choose. Are you thinking about the end of the goal for you spiritually, or are you just thinking about the temporary things? The temporary things is what this guy was looking forward to. He went through a lot of work, but his goal was to rest and take it easy. God warned him here in this story, and he says, "Fool, this night your soul will be required of you." So again, we've got to be very careful, as I've got that listed under strike two. "So is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God." So important for us to think about. Continuing on the pictures, there's a close-up shot from the investigator there. What was that pretty motorcycle? It was just laying in pieces there. Somewhere I was out on that road there. At this picture, I think they were actually administering me and trying to deal with the motorcycle. The cause of the accident is actually on the picture, but I won't point that out. This is not a person sitting there. That is not a body. That's just a pile of blankets. But then just look at that. And I know that some of these pictures may be uncomfortable. Mom may be uncomfortable with them. But just keep going back to that bike when I showed the first picture. It was mint condition. Both bikes that I had were in mint condition. And they were completely ready to do it. That motorcycle is a very popular bike. It was well sought after. But it didn't matter because it was broken in pieces. The first time by just the driver, second time by getting caught off guard by a deer running across the road. Strikes again. Close up on the damage in the motorcycle there. And then there, evidence of what caused the accident. Just crazy. Dad was hesitant to get rid of this. We had some stuff out in the garage that I said, "I want to get rid of it." And he's like, "Why don't you save it and show how good those things did protecting you?" Well, and I kept thinking about, we talked just recently on Wednesday about the helmet of salvation. Why is a helmet important in battle? A helmet's important in battle for the same reason it's important on a motorcycle or anything else that involves high speeds. It's, your head is a soft thing. It needs to be protected. I didn't feel like I was going that fast, but even then, when I hit the ground, you can see the damage to the helmet. So like we talked about the first lesson, surviving an accident is one thing, but surviving the different things that happen to you afterwards is the thing to watch out for. Mike came back to me when we were between lessons, and he said, "You didn't really talk about strike three." He was asking if I had a third accident that he didn't remember. And this is what I was saving up for me and for all of you today. Strike three. Had things gone just slightly different in either of my bike accidents, talking about my accidents, I would not be here today. There would just be a gap. Roger would not be here at all. Like the rich man in the story that I just read, he had no idea that his third strike was about to happen. He was paying attention. He was looking at the situation, going to that analogy of a baseball game. Saw what the pitcher was throwing. I mean, the batter that's not upright can see what they're doing. See where the field, how the field's aligned. Just taking all that stuff into consideration. But he hadn't thought about what was about to happen to him. Every day, Satan is throwing things at us that we simply cannot hit. And these are the graphics I'll be showing here in just a moment. So are we studying enough? Is that making... We know one of the things you see about baseball, and I hear the people talking about Cincinnati all the time because I typically only follow them. Their batting has not been doing good this year because they haven't been doing batting practice. Well, what about a Christian? Are we studying enough? Are we ready for anything there? Are we practicing prayer regularly? It's okay to get out there and swing at balls, but are you actually running the bases? Are you going out there and making catches? That's kind of how prayer is in our lives. Are we practicing righteousness? When we do all those things at home and we go out into the world, are we still the righteous person that we want to be? Or what does the world see? Or are we caught up in the spotlight of life? Just like the story of the rich man. He was so happy that he had so much abundance, he was going to enjoy it. Sometimes we get to that point too. So these things have less to do with the spiritual side, but just think about this. Apply this to what I mentioned about Satan being that scheming dragon or the lion that seeks to devour. You know, a lion that gets prey regularly is a lion that's very nimble. Prey goes this way, dives underneath some brush. That lion can move out of the way instantly and find it. So a pitcher in baseball needs to figure out what the weak point is for a batter. And you hear this all the time. The scouting report said, why do they talk about that? They're going up ahead of time and looking at the pitchers and the people that are in the field and the base runners, seeing what their weaknesses are and trying to exploit them. Satan, remember, he has angels of his own. He has minions out there looking at each one of us saying, Roger Starnes is weak in this area. Let's take advantage of it. And he's saying that about every single person that's here this morning. So for a pitcher, you got the four-seam fastball, two-seam fastball, cutter, splitter. I'm just going to go through these quickly, but just pay attention. The lines in red that's connected to the ball shows where the ball starts and where it finishes within the strike zone. And then down below those show the pitcher's mound and the base, the home plate, and how much arc there is to the ball. So you got those four. You got the fork ball, curve ball, slider, slurve, which I've never even heard of before, but just look at the way that these things come in. And that's why people that are getting paid millions of dollars still whiff, as we used to call it. They swing right through balls, and they're like, how could you miss that? It's because these people are paid to throw things at them that's difficult to hit. Screwball, changeup, palm ball, circle changeup, some of those I don't recognize. So again, on strike three. As was mentioned in the first lesson, some of us have no strikes in life. I've had strikes in my life, but maybe none of you have. Since you've been little, you've been on the Christian road to trying to be a godly man or woman. Things have gone well for you. You've had success. You're raising your kids really good. Everything seems to be going good. But then what happens here? Some of us have no strikes in life, but then our lives are lost in an unexpected out due to a lack of practicing the very person that we claim to be. And that's what I was talking about earlier. Are we keeping active in our prayer life, in our church life? Coming to church is one thing. Working with the church and spreading the gospel is another thing we all struggle with. But all it takes is one person to reach out there and grab a ball, and you're out. The game ends. Maybe you were tied up and you had three people on bases, and you would have been the fourth person. It could have been a grand slam. You would have won by four, but because you hit it in a place where somebody could catch it, that game ended. I actually started looking for a picture of motorcycles, and I gave up because I couldn't find anything for this idea of the game being over. Hebrews 9:27, it says, "It is appointed for men once to die, but after this, the judgment." You know, I talked about, if you would, to take those visual images that I showed, a pretty motorcycle. And maybe you don't like motorcycles, you like a pretty car or a pretty truck or something else that you really admire. If it's not well maintained and something happens to it, it's going to be destroyed. And in most automobile and motorcycle cases, they go to a salvage yard. This is a salvage yard in China. There must be, I was going to try to count them last night, and I was like, I don't have time for all this. There must be 2,000 different motorcycles inside there. Every one of those motorcycles has been taken to the salvage yard, either because it's been wrecked, it stopped running, or it's just been it's dilapidated. And some of these people are inside there trying to find parts for it. But don't use that image for a motorcycle salvage yard. Look at that image as individuals. Me, you, your friends, your kids, your family, aunts, uncles, grandparents, all of them in a place reserved for judgment. All of them maybe have faced a strike or two and not done well. Maybe they got an out, no strikes at all, like we just talked about. But something hit their lives. Satan went after them in such a way that they were taken out. And this image, I think, really represents that. Things that should be functional, that should have ability to do something for people, that have been cut short. And so that's how we all end up one day. Some get many strikes throughout their lives, but as they are tested, they get on base. And that's one of the things that we wanted to think about. Some may never get a strike, but are taken out after many great hits. And just think about that. Like I've said earlier, some of the best baseball players sometimes don't perform as well as you might expect them to. The Hall of Fame, not about motorcycles, but again, this baseball analogy. If you do a good job throughout your career as a baseball player, one day you may get voted into the Hall of Fame, and they will tell people that this person was able to get on base a lot, they were able to hit a lot, they've got a lot of people in, they were on winning teams, they made it became national champions. John 14:2-4 says, "In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you, I go to prepare a place for you. And if I go to prepare a place for you, I will come again and receive you to myself, that where I am, there you may be also. And where I go, you know, and the way you know." Also from this picture, I want us to keep thinking about that. The Hall of Fame, if somebody has already passed on, they go back and they look at what they did that was significant in their careers. And they put them up on pictures and in prints to say, this person is gone now, but look at what they did. That's what I want. That's what all of us should want. For God to look at our lives and say, Roger Starnes Jr., he did a good job. He hit some strikes from time to time, but he never got out. He kept on going. He didn't give up. And he helped other people to get there too. And most of all, the restoration there. We keep looking at these in both lessons. This bike started off nice and got torn to pieces, but then I ended up with showing the bike in good shape again. That's what it's all about. That's what being restored as a Christian is all about. That's what becoming a Christian is all about. Broken, disfigured people being restored to a condition of good so that God will accept them. And it's a difficult place to stay, but hopefully those things will help you think about that and not think about motorcycles or cars. But I just want you to think about not your body, but your soul. I think we sometimes get transfixed by our bodies, and we want our hair to stay a certain color. We want to have hair. We don't want to get too big around the waist. It's all about flesh. But inside here, just like that analogy I made earlier when I couldn't remember that plaster, this body, inside of it, it's got something precious inside of it. To God, it's precious. It doesn't matter what we're doing with it. It's precious to God. If we're letting it get out of control, just think about how he feels about that. But if we're making it pristine, he says he'll reward us, and he'll make sure that we have a place, just as that passage talked about. Jesus is preparing for us. So if there's things that you need to share with the congregation this morning, the time is now to do that as we stand and sing.